Now we're holding on page 18 in Yoma Osiyotes. We started learning yesterday about the censuses that Shaul took of the Jewish soldiers before two different battles that he went to, one against Ammon, one against Amalek. One, it says he counted them the Bozek, and the other one was Batloim, and the Gemara understood that that meant that the first time he counted them using broken pieces of earthenware, and the second time he counted them using sheep, where each person took a sheep from his flock, where we said he had become very rich after he became king, and then they count up the number of sheep. So now the Gemara is going to talk about, since we mentioned the second battle over there against Amalek, before which he counted the soldiers, so now the Gemara is going to digress to talk about a little bit about that war. The pasuk says Vayorev Vanochal Vagomer. The pasuk says that Shaul came to Vayorev Shaul at Eir Amalek. The pasuk says Shaul came until the capital city of Amalek. Vayorev Vanochal, and he fought in the valley. Now, of course, the simple sense means exactly that the battle took place in the valley. But the Gemara is going to darshan it differently for a number of reasons. Among them are that we don't find specifically that Amalek lived in the valleys. Adarav, you have the pasuk in Parshas Shlach when the Meraglim come back with their report where they say that the Amalekim where you have actually at the end of the story of the Meraglim, when you have the Ma'apilim, that they lived in the mountains. So why would we assume that they lived in the valley and that Shaul fought them there? And there's other explanations why the Gemara is going to douch in it. Another point is because after that, you have the pasuk where Shaul tells the Canaanim to go away from there so they don't get caught in the crossfire. And only then is there Vayach Shaul as Amalek, so implying that the Vayorev Vanochal is not necessarily the actual battle yet. Anyway, so Omer Abmani al Iske Nachal. It means that Shaul was fighting or arguing about a matter involving a Nachal. Hashem tells Shaul through Shmuel, go and strike and defeat and kill Amalek. Omar, so Shaul started second guessing. Because of one life. Omer Torah habiu egla arufa banochal, and the Torah says that you have to bring an egla arufa and decapitate it in a valley. So even just because you find one dead body, calling a shomer, so on a foshes halolo, alachas kam v'kama, how much more so all these lives? So he's having rachmanis on them. How could it be? Well, yeah. So how could it be that Hashem is telling him to kill so many people? A number of them first deal with the question. So what was he thinking? I mean, Shmuel told him in so many words. So of course, one possibility is that he may have figured that Hashem told Shmuel, and then Shmuel expanded on the instructions. Hashem tells him, "Leichli kisas amalek v'achramtem as kolash aloi ve'ishra ad isha," etc. So he may have figured the basic mitzvah to go and fight against Amalek. Fine, that's a mochames mitzvah like any other. But the specifics, where he's saying ve'ishra ad isha ma'ulav ad oynik, maybe Shmuel added those in on his own, and they're not actually directly from Hashem. With that said, though, a number of the Mephoshim deal with various angles on it. Among them, that he wasn't thinking he shouldn't kill them, but he was thinking, look, you have to bring an egla arufa afterwards for when you find a dead body. By the same token, if we kill all these people, we're going to need a kapara afterwards. Therefore, that would be a reason to leave the animals alive so that we can, from Amalek, so that we can bring them afterwards as korbanos to be a kapara for ourselves. And the Rif brings over here a possibility that what's going on is, again, in the pasuk over there, you have that the Canaanim, who are descendants of Yisrael, are living near the Amalekim. And Shaul actually sends them a message, move away from there, because otherwise you might get killed together with the Amalekim. So now when Shaul is second guessing, he may be thinking to himself, says the Rif, he's thinking, you know what, you may have some members of the Canaanim that are still there. Maybe not all of them went away. How could it be that we're going to end up killing fellow Jews together with the Amalekim? We can't do that. They're hostages among the Amalekim, to use what's going on currently, and therefore we have to have rachmanos on them, and therefore we have to be extra careful not to kill them, even if it means leaving alive some Amalekim. Whatever the case, that was his cheshbon, and he continues in Adam Chota Behemah Machota. After all, even if the people did averus, the animals didn't commit any averus, they shouldn't have to be killed. If the adults did averus, the children didn't do any averus, why should we have to kill them? Now, the fact is, Maharshal points out that, now we do find, of course, that Shaul left Agag and the animals alive. Agag himself, fine. Ben Yoyada says, sure, he intended to kill him, but he wanted to keep him alive for Shmuel to decide what misa he should get, which was wrong. He should have just killed him by the sword and have done with it. But the behemoth we do find in the psukim that he left alive. We don't actually find in the psukim that he left alive any of the children. But Maharshal says, if he had Rachmanos on Agag and left him alive, then it may well be that he also had Rachmanos on the children. With that said, again, you have the different Mephoshim who are saying that maybe they're saying that at least we should have to bring, maybe he's saying at least we should have to bring a kapara for killing them, therefore we have to leave alive the animals in order to bring us korbanos, or maybe he means the children of the Canaan who are among there who are going to get caught in the crossfire. Whatever, so he's second guessing things. Miyad Yotzes Baskol Omraloya. Baskol came out and said to him with the Loshan Apostle from Kehelas, Al Tihi Tzadik Habe. Don't be such a tzaddik. The Irsha tells you what to do. Don't be second guessing and think that you know better and you have more Rachmanus than Hashem. Don't have Rachmanus on Rishoyim, in short. Over Shasha Omala Shol Ladoyin. Now, sometime later, when you have the whole story where David went to Noiv Iratoyanim, we talked about the other day, and Achimelech gave him Lechem upon him and gave him a sword as well, and Doeg was there and saw everything that happened, and then he went and told Lashon Hara to Shaul that Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, and all the Kohenim over there are in cahoots with David, and so Shaul tells Doeg, Soiv Atof Gaba Kohenim, you go, first Shaul tells his other generals over there, Amasa or Avner, to kill the Kohenim, and they refuse to because it's against Halacha. Then he says to Doeg, you know what, you're the one who brought the report against them, so you go carry out the sentence. Soivatof Gaba Kohenim, you turn around and strike and kill the Kohenim. Vehimatam Ishvat Isha, kill the men and the women. So now, Yotzes Baskol V'omrelay Al Tir Shaharbe. So now, if Baskol came out and said the following possible, In Kehelas, you have two psukim back to back. Al ti tzadik harbe, al ti schak am yoser, and then you have a posik. Then you have a posik al tir shaharbe. So first the Baskel have told him the first one. Don't think you're a greater tzadik than Eibishter. Now it's coming and saying the opposite. Don't be such a rasha. Don't hear the Eibishter doesn't want you to kill these kohenim of Noiv. What do you think you're doing? In fact, Maharshal points out we have that same shodash rasha earlier in connection with Shaul as well. We have earlier when it summarizes the various battles that he fought against the enemies of the Jewish people all around Eretz Yisrael, it uses the expression of a chol asher yifnei yarshia. Now, what does that mean? So the poshut pshat, it means, in other words, that like he treated them like Rishoyim. He had no rachmanis on them. So now the Baskel is telling him, fine, it's all fine and good to be a Rosha and to act like a Rosha towards the enemies of the Jewish people. What are you doing acting like a Rosha against the Kohenim of Noi? So it was all part of the same mistake that he thought he knows better and he can decide for himself how to do things. So now, in this connection, Omer Rav Huna, Kamalei Choli V'Lei Margish Gavra D'Morei Sayei. Take a look how much somebody doesn't even realize and somebody doesn't even feel when a person is helped out by Hashem. He doesn't even realize how much Siyata D'Shmaya he has. For example, Shol Ba'achas, Shol did one thing wrong, V'Ol Saloi, and because of that, he forfeited his kingdom. David b'shtayim v'lo also lie, whereas David did two things wrong, as we're going to go on to say, and he did not forfeit his kingship. So in other words, Rashi says that a person who has, that Hashem is on his side, he has less to worry about anything bad that might happen, because we see that Hashem is on David's side, and therefore he didn't end up getting punished by losing his kingdom. Shol ba'achas ma'ininu ma'isa da'agag. So you're going to say the fact that he left Agag and the animals and whatnot of Amalek alive. The question is, va'ika nami ma'isa d'noiv irakoinim. You also have, we just said, he killed noiv irakoinim. Doesn't that count as a second avera? And the answer is, ma'isa da'agag siv nichamti ki m'lachti es shol l'melech. After that one, Hashem says, I regret that I made Shaul king. So in other words, at that point, he had forfeited the kingship. What happened afterwards with Noiv is an avera, it's true. But that's, you can't say he forfeited the kingship because of that, because by that time he had already forfeited it. Now, a number of the Mefarshim point out, the Ritva points out over here, Marshah, Tosfos Hashanim, that you actually find, now there was an earlier episode involving Shaul where also he didn't listen to Shmuel, and Shmuel told him because of that you forfeited the kingship. Namely, you have early in, before Shaul was even accepted as king by the Jewish people after he had been anointed by Shmuel, but before he was actually accepted, Shmuel told him, there's going to come a point when you're going to be in Gilgal. You have to wait for me for 7 full days. So now what happened was, shortly after Shaul becomes king, the Plishtim are attacking, and Shaul has his army, his few hundred people over there in Gilgal. Meanwhile, the Plishtim are getting closer and closer. People are getting nervous. People are deserting. And Shaul is waiting because Shmuel said he's going to come in 7 days. And meanwhile, it's already the 7th day, and things are really getting desperate. And Shaul finally says, you know what, before everybody disappears, I'd better bring the korban, which we do before battle, to ask Hashem to help us. I can't wait for Shmuel anymore. The situation is too dire. He finishes bringing the korban, and just then Shmuel shows up. So it was test day, and he didn't pass it. And Shmuel tells him, because of that, you didn't listen to Hashem, therefore, va'ata mamlacha choloi sofim. Hashem tells him, So that's the question. That's the Ritva points out, Tosfos Hashanim points out, Marsha points out that already by that story, Hashem told him, Mamlacha Choloi Sofim. So why we say now, after the story with Amalek, that story is in Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Gimel. After that, you have the story with Amalek is in Perek Tetzvav. So by the time it came to the war with Amalek, it had already been told that he forfeited the kingship. What do we mean by Achas, that because of the matter with Agag? So there's a few different answers. The Ritva says over here that then Tosfos Hashanim says somewhat similarly that at that point it wasn't that he forfeited it for all time. He himself is Hashem is telling, I don't want you as king anymore. However, his children could have still succeeded him in the kingship. After the story with Agag, it was completely removed from his family, and afterwards, his son Ishbosheth was king over some of the Shvatim for 2 years, because Avner was manipulating things, but basically, the kingship was completely taken away and never returned to Shaul's family. So you have one time where he personally lost it, but then you have another time where it was lost completely from his family. Marshall gives a different answer, that when Hashem tells him, when Shmuel tells him in Hashem's name, after that first incident, he's not saying because of what you just did, you forfeited the kingship. He's just saying that if you keep on behaving this way and not listening to every single thing that Eved says, then you're going to end up losing your kingship. So it was a warning rather than a statement that you have lost it. So in that case, we can well say that only when it happened, the story with Agag, only then did he actually forfeit the kingship, and that was that. So that was with Shaul. So one Avera, there is, by the way, there's a Medrash that mentions altogether 5 things that Shaul did wrong, for which eventually we know was killed in battle against the Plishtim. You have these matters with Agag and with Noivir Akoyanim. You also have that he had gone to the Balas Oiv over there to have her do Oiv magic for him. There was a time earlier during the same war with the Plishtim where the Kohen Gadol of Yasser was all ready to ask the Urim V'Tumim, and Shaul says, don't bother. We have a war to win over here, basically. The Plishtim are busy attacking each other. We got to strike while the iron is hot. That's a mistake of his because you don't speak about the Urim V'Tumim that way. So you had a few different things that it mentions. One thing that's interesting, that's conspicuously left out, that Shaul did wrong, is it doesn't say in that list of things the fact that he pursued David all the time and was trying to kill him. Because that is Shaul actually figured he has a right to do that. He figured, based on the information that he had been given from Doeg and from other people that he considered reliable, as far as he knew, David is a murdered Malchus. Therefore, he figured he has every right to go and pursue him and try to kill him. And therefore, even when that Medrash lists all the things that Shaul did wrong, it does not mention that, because from his point of view, he was completely right in doing so. Interesting, worth mentioning in that connection, actually, there is something that the commentary Das Sofrim comments on. Where it says over there that Shaul was having at various times Ruach Ra, and a couple of times like that, a couple of times when he was suffering from that Ruach Ra, he attacked David, he tried to throw a spear on him. Das Sofrim makes a very interesting point about it. He says that Ruach Ra was actually a spirit of Nevuah, or at least of Ruach HaKodesh, but it was a distorted one in the sense Shaul was able to see with Ruach HaKodesh that descendants of David, the later kings of Yehuda, some of them are going to be terribly corrupt and they're going to bring the people to Avodah Zarah and all kinds of Averis, as we know historically happened. His mistake was with the Ruach Ra, he thought that's true of David himself. So therefore, so he had a certain basis for hating David and then trying to kill him, but it was a mistaken basis, but still we don't consider that among his five Averis. But here the Gemara is focusing on the one that led to him losing the kingship, which again we're saying is the story with Agatha.
So everything was Lashem Shemayim.
So we're saying his pursuing David was Lashem Shemayim. The other ones were saying he should have known better, but with that one we're not saying he should have known better. Anyway. David b'shtayim ma'ininu, what are the two things that David did wrong that you would think he should have deserved to lose the kingship because of it, and he didn't? Ma'isa de Uriah, one is the fact that he had Uriah killed, or da'asasa, and the second one is when Hashem put the idea in his head, by Yosef, says Yisrael, Lashon HaPasuk, to go count the Jewish people.
We're
at the bottom of the page here now. Now, a lot of the Mefoshim ask the question, does Hashem play favorites? I mean, what's the logic that we would say that because that Shaul forfeited the kingship because of one Avera, and David was saying did two things wrong, and he didn't forfeit the kingship? So there's a lot of different answers. Marsha says the point is that, Anaf Yosef brings a similar point, that the difference is that Shaul's mistake directly had to do with the kingship. A king has to be absolutely bottled to what the Eibishter says. So Shaul did not. He second-guessed Hashem, therefore he forfeits the kingship because of that. As opposed to David's Averis, they were serious ones, but nevertheless, they weren't things directly involving the kingship. It's kind of like in his private life, right? Anaf Yosef brings in this connection from the Sefer Ikrim that gives a mashal about it. You have a king who had two scribes. One of them, both of them were found guilty of crimes and were sentenced. One of them for forging documents, the other one for znus. So one of them, the first one, the forger, was executed. The second one was put in jail for a while and then brought back to his position. So people asked him why. He said, because the first one, the crime that he did directly has to do with his job. His job is to write documents for the king and then sign the king's seal on them. If he's going to forge them, he's undoing the whole purpose that I have him employed. The other one is a side thing, So therefore, I'm going to punish him, but he gets his job back. The same way, Shaul's mistake had to do with his kingship, David's did not. That's one answer. Another point that some of the Mephoshim make is the fact is that David was destined, after all, to be the king of the Jewish people. Shaul was only because they asked for a king when they weren't supposed to, then the Eibishter put Shaul in. But in other words, had they not done that, then the Eibishter would have given some other greatness to Shaul, but not necessarily kingship. So like this, in other words, like his kingship is sort of, to begin with, hanging by a thread, and it depends on his meisim, whereas David's is more firmly established because he's the right person in the right time. So that's another answer. Marsha makes another point as well. Gavra de Mori Saye, when we say the expression that a person that Hashem helps him, that puts us in mind of the expression Habolitar Misayin Oisa, that when a person wants to become Torah, Hashem helps him. Well, there's a connection between them, says Marsha. Shaul, when Shmuel calls him out, what'd you do? Why'd you leave a Mechol Atzona Zeba Oznei? Why'd you leave the sheep and a Gag alive? So Shaul starts trying to rationalize and trying to argue and explain his point. And only at the end, finally, he says, finally, Chatosi. As opposed to David, when Nosson confronts him, when Nosson Anavi confronts him and says, Atah Ha'ish, how could you do such a thing? Right away, David says, Chatosi. And he right away admits his guilt. So that's the More Saye that Hashem helped him to be able, he was bali tar, he's more willing to be matahar himself, therefore Messiah Noisa, therefore Hashem helps him and to become completely tar and to not lose his kingship because of that. And instead he'll get Yisurim and so forth, as the Gemara is going to go on to talk about. Incidentally, as far as that matter, tests of the respective kings, Shaul and David, in a critical situation against the Plishtim. So I mentioned before, you have the first story in Gilgal where Shaul didn't wait the full 7 days. Then you have something similar and even actually more dramatic with David. The Psukim describe in Shmuel Beis, shortly after David was crowned as king by all the Jewish people, the Plishtim came to attack. They came to attack once, and David defeated them. Then they came back again. This time, Hashem tells him, "Wait until you go around from behind them. Don't attack them head on. When you hear a rustling noise at the tops of the mulberry trees, then that'll be a siman that Malachim are coming to help you. Then go start fighting against the Plishtim." So now the Medrash goes in and explains the details over there that what you had is. So now the Plishtim are getting closer and closer. They're like literally only a few amos apart from the Jewish people, and all the soldiers are screaming at David, "We got to do something, we got to attack, whatever, you're just going to have us sitting here like sitting ducks." And David said, "No, not till we hear that noise from the trees." And then at the last moment, they hear the noise, and then they go fight, and they win. So David, that's the Medrash says that the Malachim asked the Edishter before this, so, you know, why were you so harsh on Shaul, and here you seem to be going easier on David? And Hashem says, "Because I'll show you that David is able to pass a test that Shaul did not," and that was that story. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, now you're saying that David only did two things wrong. You're saying that there was the fact that he had Uriah killed. Now, to a certain extent, there was a heter for it because Uriah was a murder of Malchus, but still he should have had him judged by the Sanhedrin, as we learned back in Masechta Shabbos. And there's the fact that he counted the Jewish people when he wasn't supposed to, as we talked about yesterday, whether it's that the problem was he counted them without Matzah Shekel or something else, or was it the Bechlal, the fact that he counted them without having a good reason for it. Anyway, the question is, well, Ikonami Maisid Bathsheba. Don't you also have the fact that he married Bathsheba, or that he first had relations with Bathsheba? Okay, again, you have the heter that Kola Yotza Mohammed Vizdavid Kosev Get Krisu, so technically it wasn't adultery, but still, why aren't we counting that as well as something that David did wrong? And the answer is, Hosem Iparu Mine, because that he was punished for. Dichtiv, we find that when Nathan Anovi first comes to David, he doesn't start right away by telling him you did wrong. He tells him a mushel about a poor man and a rich man who has a lot of sheep, a poor man who has only one precious sheep, and then the rich man has a guest and he takes the poor man's sheep and shechts it. And then when David hears that and he thinks it's an actual case, and he says that guy, that rich person deserves misa, and there's a kivsi shalom abatoyim, and he better pay back four times the value of the sheep. Then Nosson tells him, after ha'ish, you're the man, you're the rich man in that mushel, because you took Uriah's one wife when you have so many wives of your own. So he had said, v'esakivsi yishalom abatoyim. David himself had said he has to pay fourfold for the sheep. So sure enough, David was punished four times. Yeled, the fact that his first child, Bathsheba, passed away. After he had had relations with her, she tells him, "I'm pregnant," and that set the whole rest of the story in motion, where David brings back Uriah and tries to cover things up. And to make a long story short, he ends up having Uriah sent to the battlefield and killed. Then afterwards, the pasuk continues, after Nathan Anavi came and told off David for it, he tells him your first punishment is going to be the child that Bathsheba is going to bear is going to die. And the pasuk can describe how that happened. So that was the first one. The second one is Amnon. The second one is that Amnon, David's firstborn son, was killed. So you have the whole story where Amnon lured Tamar into his house and raped her. And then afterwards, Tamar's brother, Avshalom, was very angry about that. And 2 years later, he grabbed an opportunity when Amnon was unaware and killed him. So David suffered the loss of his bachur, Tamar, the fact that Tamar was raped, Avshalom, and the fact that Avshalom eventually also rebelled against David and was killed. So he was punished with the loss of four of his own children. So you're saying he wasn't punished for Bathsheba. As a matter of fact, he was. He was punished very severely by losing four of his own children. Tosfos actually deals with the question, so how do we know some of those weren't punishment for the matter of Uriah as well? And one answer is, in fact, that's just it. Then you would have to have more punishments. If you had to have four punishments for Bathsheba plus something for Uriah as well, then you're going to have then you're going to have five, and we're talking about there were only four. Maushado points out, when you get down to it, after all, what happens when we know the Torah says when a person steals a sheep and shechts it, he doesn't pay fourfold, he pays fivefold. So in that case, David had to actually be paid five times as much. So therefore, what it is the Gemara is going to go on to say that he had saras, as well as he lost four of his children, so therefore there actually is a fivefold penalty. The point is, though, that he was punished for the matter of Bathsheba. The Gemara is trying to find things where he did something wrong, and he was not actually punished for that. So that would be the fact that he had Uriah killed, and the fact that he counted the Jewish people.
So David actually passed judgment against himself,
Yeah, he passed judgment against himself, and then Nosson tells him that's you. Yeah, there's a famous thing where the Baal Shem Tov says when they have the expression in the Mishnah, after also litin din v'cheshbon, is the Eibushit does the same kind of thing when a person is in front of the Beis Din, or not even when he's in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, in a previous time during his life, the Eibushit puts in front of him a circumstance similar to his own, and he judges the other person. You know what, what a horrible thing that guy did, and then that itself makes the cheshbon against him.
Be careful what you say.
This is true, yeah. So the Gemara continues, Ihochi hasosa nami iporu mine. Well, in that case, then what are you telling me that David was convinced to count the Jewish people and he wasn't punished because of that? He was punished. Dichtiv, vayitan Hashem dever ba'om, or Yisrael, this Lashon HaPasuk, ma'borkavad esmoyin, that the Jewish people were struck with a plague. So we see there was a punishment. And the answer is, hosam la iporu mi gufe. The difference is there the punishment wasn't on David personally. Here we're talking about there was a punishment on David personally. Or the other gear says, the Gemara asks, Hosam nami lo yiporu migufe. In the case with Uriah, also he wasn't punished with Bathsheba, rather, he wasn't punished with his body. And the answer is loye, as a matter of fact, yes. Iporu migufe, he was indeed punished on his own body. The Amr of Yehuda, Amr Rav, Shisha Chadoshim Nitzara David. David was struck with Tzara'as for 6 months after the whole thing with Uriah and Bathsheba. Upirshu Memena Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin stayed away from him during that time because he's in the Tzara, they can't be near him. Venistauku Memena Shechina, and the Shechina went away from the Ruach HaKodesh, went away from him because a person can have Ruach HaKodesh only when he's happy, as we've learned before, and during those 6 months, David was not happy. Shenemar, as we find, all those things happen because we find that David says, Yeshuvu li yireecha v'yodei edesecha. Let those who fear you and those who know your mitzvahs come back to me. So what do you mean come back? Because they had gone away. So David is davening that his tzaras should be over and they should be able to come back and continue being with him. Uchtiv, and you have in Kapitel Nun Aleph, which is the Kapitel that he wrote after this whole Maisa with Bathsheba, he says, Hashiva li sason yeshecha, return to me the joy of your saving, v'ruach nedivas yismecheni, and support me with a generous spirit, meaning he's asking to have his Ruach HaKodesh back. So we see that he had lost both of those things. And the Ma'aral, by the way, makes a point. It means that David was punished in all three aspects of a person's life. In his gashmiyistik body, he got tzaras. In his seichel, that the Sanhedrin with whom he would discuss matters of Torah went away from him. And in his ruchnias, that the shchina, that the Ruach HaKodesh left him. Anyway, the point is, yes, he was indeed punished with his body as a result of the whole thing with Bathsheba. Therefore, we can't count that as one of the two things that he, so to speak, got away with. Marsha, by the way, mentions an interesting side point. In that moshul that Nosson HaNavi says to him, to which David reacted and said, V'esakivsi yishalam abatoyim, in the moshul, Uriah was a poor person and David was a rich person, because Nosson tells him, you have a lot of wives, Uriah only had the one. We find the number of psukim where David calls himself Oni. We find ki oni ve'evian anoichi, where when he's about to build the Beis Hamikdash, when he wants to build the Beis Hamikdash, he gathers together all the people to tell them of his plans and to tell them to give nedavos as well. And he says, ve'ani ba'oni hachinos to the Beis Hashem, in my poverty, I prepared all of this resources for the house of Hashem. So he's saying, in other words, Nosson HaNavi called me rich in the moshul. The truth is, I'm poor. All my asheros only comes from Hashem. So therefore, so we have two things that David kind of got away with, the mice of Uriah and the matter with the Hassasa, because with the matter of the Hassasa, the Jewish people collectively were punished, but he personally was not.
How many wives did he have, though?
So at the beginning, when he was king in Hebron, he had six. Afterwards, the Pasuk says, in Yerushalayim, he married more. By the time the story of Bathsheba happened, he had 18. The halacha is a Jewish king is allowed to have up to 18 wives. In fact, actually, the Gemara in Sanhedrin actually brings different opinions about that halacha, but that's the final halacha, is that it's 18. In fact, you find that, why does he want 18 wives and pashtos? The reason is because a king needs to have a lot of heirs. He needs to have one who's going to succeed him as king, but he also wants to have lots of others who can be trusted ministers and governors and whatever in the government. You want to have people who are related to the king, so they're more likely to be, to do what he says. So it also helps this way the king is connected by marriage to many different families, and this way he has more of an influence on them. We find by Shlomo, he married wives from other countries with the same intention. This way it could be mashpia on them to come closer to the Eibushter. he did it the wrong way. So, but yeah, but that is the idea behind it. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Va Amar Rav Kibul David Loshen Hara." Don't we have another thing though? That Rav, so Rav Huna was saying there were two things that David did that he didn't get punished for. So now on the face of it, we have a third thing though. Rav said that David accepted Lashon Hara. Now Tosfos Yeshanim points out there are two ways of explaining the Gemara. You could say that the Gemara assumes that Rav Huna agrees with Rav, and therefore then you have to ask how is Rav Huna mentioning only two things, Uriah and Asasa, if according to Rav there's a third. Or it could be the Gemara is assuming, fine, Rav Huna doesn't necessarily have to agree with Rav, but the fact is, what do we do with Rav's opinion? Anyway, so we have like this. David had looked around to find if we learned this in the Sefer Shabbos. David had looked to find if there's any survivors from Shaul's family. They tell him in particular, after all, he had been such close friends with Yehonasan. He wanted to find a descendant of his to do good with. He finally finds out that there's Mephibosheth, a son of Yehonasan, who is still around. And so David brings him to his palace and says, "You're going to constantly eat by my table," and so on and so forth. Now, what happens is, when David was forced to leave Yerushalayim during Avshalom's revolt, Mephibosheth did not go with him. Now, Mephibosheth was lame. So you have, when David is on his way out of Yerushalayim, he meets up with Siva, the slave of Shaul, who had first told him about Mephibosheth, and then Siva has donkeys laden with provisions, and Siva offers them all to the king, and when David asks, "Where's Mephibosheth?" Siva says, "Mephibosheth stayed behind in Yerushalayim because he's figuring now he has a shot at getting back the kingship." Because Siva is claiming, in other words, Mephibosheth is figuring, look, he's a grandson of Shaul. People are going to say eventually, who needs the whole Malchus-based David? All we have is this constant drama, first with David and Bathsheba, and now with Avshalom. Let's just forget about all of them, and we'll give the kingship back to somebody from Shaul's family. Siva claimed that Mephibosheth was doing that. Now, at that point, David seemed to have accepted that report. Now, that's not what that's not what Rav means by Kibul David Lashon Hara, though, because that was provisional, basically. He actually explains in Shabbos. David didn't really have the head for it right now, but he was saying, if what you're saying is true, then yeah, then we'll deal with it. Later on, what happens is, when David comes back to Yerushalayim, after Avshalom's revolt is defeated, after Avshalom himself is killed, Mephibosheth comes out to see David, and he looks very unkempt. The passage says, "Like also raglov, like also svamai." He hadn't trimmed the hair on his legs, or washed his legs, or whatever. He hadn't trimmed his mustache, so he looked very unkempt. And so now there's two ways you could understand that. Was he doing that the whole time while David was away, out of tsar for the fact that David is having to wander around who knows where, and since he can't go, he goes on. So David asks him, "Why didn't you come with me?" Mephibosheth says, "Because I couldn't, I'm lame, and Siva took the donkey." So now at that point, David is not sure what to do. On the one hand, Siva has claimed that Mephibosheth was disloyal to him. On the other hand, Mephibosheth himself is claiming that he was loyal to David the whole time, and that Siva just made up a story. So David ends up saying, "After the Siva tachlok was a sudden, you and Siva will divide up the estate equally. I'm going to give half of it to Siva in case he's correct, but I'm going to let you keep half of it." So now, Rav is saying that David did wrong by that, by listening to Lashon Hara. He should have ignored Siva's report. He should have realized that Mephibosheth is telling the truth.
I feel a man is not supposed to trim the hair on his legs. That's a woman's thing.
Yeah, but it depends. Different times, different places. Different times, different places. Different people do their personal grooming differently. Where it's a place where it's common for men to do it, then there's no issue with it. Anyway, whatever the point. Now, so again, when you look at Mephibosheth coming out to greet David so unkempt, and of course you don't do that in front of a king, there's two ways of looking at it. You could say that it shows Mephibosheth is telling the truth, that the whole time David had been away, he's in such sorrow over the situation that David is in, that he's not taking care of his personal grooming. Or you could say, fakir, he's upset that David came back. Now all his plans collapsed. Which would bear out what Siva says. Now, Rav is saying that David was wrong in accepting Siva's Lashon Hara, that he should have realized that Siva is lying, and Mephibosheth coming like that shows that he's telling the truth. So then, according to Rav, it comes out that the third thing that David did wrong, and we don't seem to find that he was punished for it. The answer is Kiddush Shmuel. The answer is fine. Rav Huna can be saying like Shmuel. Dama Loi Kibel, where Shmuel says that no, David was not guilty of accepting Lashon Hara, because as the Gemara says in Shabbos, Dvarim Ani Karim Chazabei, when he saw that Mephibosheth is coming there looking unkempt, he has every right to say that means that Mephibosheth did that, because it shows that he's upset that David has returned safely. Otherwise, why doesn't he take a haircut and trim things and whatever before he comes out to greet David? Okay, so the question is, Ulurav de Amakibo, and the answer is not a question, rather a statement. Ulurav de Amakibo, furthermore, you should know, even according to Rav, who says that David was guilty of accepting Lashon Hara, you should know, Ho'i Parumine. As a matter of fact, David was punished for it. De Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. When David says to Mephibosheth, I'm going to split the difference, you and Sivo are each going to get half of the estate. Which again, according to Rav, David was wrong for doing that, because he shouldn't have listened to Tziva. Yotis Baspo V'Omrelai, Baspo came out and announced, Rechavam V'Yeravam Yachlaku Malchusta. In the future, Rechavam, your grandson, and Yeravam, who was also an Eved of his, are going to end up splitting up the kingship. So it's Midah Keneged Midah. David had inappropriately given half of it to an Eved, and therefore the result is that Yeravam, who was an Eved of Rechavam, he's a subject of Rechavam, as all the Jewish people were supposed to be, ended up getting half the kingdom. So Tosfos Yeshanim point out, and Tosfos Yeshanim and Marsha point out, it is true that that's not migufe. It's true that that's not a punishment on David's body. On the other hand, losing a large part of the malchus is tantamount to a punishment on his body. And therefore that can still fit with what we said, with what Rav Huna said. There are two things that David did wrong where he wasn't personally punished, the Maisa of Uriah and the Maisa of Asasa. Now, in addition, according to Rav, there's a third one, but there, David received such a severe punishment for it that his malchus, granted it was 40 years after he passed away, but still, that his malchus was split up, that can be considered. So only Shlomo was king for 40 years, right? And there were no rebellions or anything during his time, yeah. Well, I mean, you do have, there was a time when he was kicked off the throne by Ashmedai. You have the whole story in Gittin, but you have an opinion in the Gemara that he never went back to being a melech. But yeah, so each one of them had their ups and downs, basically, but yeah.
He was just king over his walking cane.
So at one point it was king over only his walking stick, yeah. Anyway, the point is that we answered what Rav Huna says, that yes, all the other things that we find that David did wrong, there was some punishment for them. Only the matter of Uriah and the matter of Asasa, was there no punishment that affected David personally. In the case of Asasa, there was a plague that struck the Jewish people, but David personally was not affected. So that bears out what we said before, that a person doesn't even realize, David doesn't even realize how much Hashem is on his side and protecting him from the consequences of his actions, unlike we said, Shaul did one thing wrong and he lost the kingship for it. So the Gemara continues more on the topic of Shaul. The Pasuk says, when Shaul became king, it says, Ben Shana Shaul B'molchai. Now, literally, Ben Shana would mean he was a year old, but obviously he wasn't a year old when he became king. So what does that mean? Now, in a Poshet Pshat, there on the Foshim on the Pasuk that explain it means when Shaul had ruled for 1 year, then the following events happened. But the Gemara doesn't like that, because that's not an usual way of saying it. So therefore, Amar Rav Huna, Ben Shana, Shalai Tom Tam Chet. It means that when Shaul became king, he was like a 1 year old who never even tasted the taste of Aveiros. Afterwards, there was the Maisa with Agag, but before he became king, he was a complete tzaddik and had never done any chet.
Sounds like Sarah.
Maskev sort of Nachum Vayitzchok, but Rav Nachum Vayitzchok says, how do you know Ben Shana means that? Ema could Ben Shana shemuluchok betita betzaya. Maybe on the contrary, Ben Shana means he was like a 1 year old baby who's filthy. Now, Tosfos Yeshanim says, how could Rav Nachum Yitzchak even think to say such a thing? So he says, because maybe Rav Nachum Yitzchak meant it actually as a bit of a compliment. He said it in a derogatory way, but after all, maybe it means that Shaul was not so concerned about his covered. That maybe, in other words, he doesn't mind being dirty for the sake of Toto, for the sake of other important things, and therefore he would be, in that sense, like a 1 year old baby. Still, it was a disrespectful way to speak about Shaul. So Chazer Rav Nachman Siyuta Bechelmi. That night, Rav Nachman saw Siyuta in his dream. Rashi says a Siyuta means scary malochim, who were frightening them. The Me'ili says it means a whip. A whip, like you'd use a whip somebody. Yeah. Whatever the case, it showed, obviously, he realized he had done something wrong. Omar, he says, Na'nesi lachem atmes Shaul ben Kish. I've spoken too much against you, bones of Shaul ben Kish. So in other words, he's asking Mechila. Why bones? Why does he mention bones? Marsha mentions, now we did mention that one of the big things during Shaul's kingship is he was pursuing David all the time. Now, that was because of Kina. There is an expression the Gemara has in Shabbos that a person who has the midah of Kina, his bones end up rotting. But now Rav Nachman Yitzchok is realizing that he'd spoken disrespectfully against Shaul. He's saying, when you were buried, all there were was bones, because the Plishtim had first captured David, had first captured Shaul's body after he was killed on the battlefield, and they hung it up on the wall, and the people of Yavish Gilad had to go and sneak it away from there and bury it secretly, so all that was left by that time was bones. But now, your bones are still there, you're not guilty of this kina against David, because like we said before, Shaul had good reasons for it, and therefore your bones are still intact, so I'm asking the chila from you.
Kina
is jealousy. Yeah, jealousy. But but he still saw the siyuta again in his dream. Omar, so he says he still hadn't spoken respectfully enough. You have to give him his title. Then the nightmares went away once he had shown the proper derech eretz for Shaul. So the point being, in other words, even though we're saying that Shaul made serious mistakes, nevertheless he was a tzaddik, and you still can't speak of him disrespectfully. And the pasuk mentions Ben Shaul and Shaul b'Molchoi again to highlight that point that there was a time in his life when he was a great tzaddik. And even afterwards, actually, there's actually a Gemara in Moed Katan also where David sings Shigoyin LaDavid. He has a capital Zion, a capital Al Divrei Chush Ben Yamini, thanking Hashem for saving him from Chush Ben Yamini, which means, oh, actually, no, what you have is capital Yud Ches, rather. He says, Ashadibel Hashem, V'yom Hitzalois Mikach Kol Ovo, V'yad Shol. So he's thanking Hashem for defeating Shol and keeping him. And Hashem says to David, you know what? You have no business. Don't think that you're greater than Shol. It's just that you were the right person in the right place, and he was not. And then David writes, Capital Zion, Shigoyin with David, to a Shigoyin, meaning it was a Shigoga, it was a mistake on my part to speak about Shaul that way. So we see, in other words, that Shaul was a great tzaddik, and we shouldn't put him down. Tosfos, by the way, in fact, mentions, when you look at the catalog of things that we said before that David did wrong, why don't we mention that? That we said he spoke disrespectfully against Shaul. And the answer is because that was B'shach Tzara. That wasn't even, he was having his suffering so much from Shaul, you can't hold him to account for the fact that he spoke disrespectfully about Shaul. But then he realized his mistake from what the Abishta told him, and he wrote Capital Zion to make up for that. All right. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ula, Chopei Chedrin. At the moment of Geula, we're going to be going immediately over to Chaim Nitzchim without any break. So that Rebbe was talking about, that to Pashas, there won't need to be a break like this. We talk about Kol Yimei Chayecha, Yimei Chayecha Olam Hazeh, Kol Yimei Chayecha L'Havi L'Moisim Mashiach. There doesn't have to be a break between them. Now, all the previous generations had that. They had Yimei Chayecha, then they passed away, and then they're going to come alive by Tchias Amesim. But now, the Geula can come, take her from Yad, and Mamash at this moment, so that way, the last moment of Geulas becomes the first moment of Geula, and from Yimei Chayecha of nowadays, without any hapsik, we write, even if a person is older than 70 years old, he writes right away goes into Chaim Nitzchim. As you have the expression that the Medrash says, Reuven, they went down into Mitzrayim with the names Reuven and Shimon. They came out of there with the names Reuven and Shimon, because we know they didn't change their names in Golus. So the same way, we'll have the continuation of Kol Yimei Chayecha continuing straight into Yemos Mashiach and the Chaim Nitzchim event.
Yeah.
Continuing on halachas of candle lighting. You should light lots of candles with covered Shabbos. Different people have different minhagim, how many you should light. At the very least, you should have two keneged zocher v'shomer. B'shas and chach, one is enough, and they should be long enough to last until after the meal, or at least they should last until nightfall. You should light nice candles. When you make the candles nice, the Gemara says in Shabbos, having a bonum tamid chachamim, then a person is zoich of the children of tamid chachamim, because ner mitzvah of Torah are. So through the ner mitzvah comes the light of Torah. For that reason, when a woman is lighting candles, she should be davening that the Eidosh should give him children, to give her children who'll enlighten in Torah. And beforehand, she should give some frutis to tzedakah. And then, if she has trouble with children, she doesn't have any children, she has tzar gidabonim or whatever, then let her say afterwards, after the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the story of Chana, and say it for Kavana, and then that helps.
If you're going out to someone else's house as a guest, your own candle...
That we're going to talk about in later Sikh. Yeah, we're going to talk about later in later Sikh and what you do if you're a guest in somebody's house. Yeah. No, for that, I mean,